From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 346, Software-Defined Networking on VMware, with guest Scott Lowe. Recorded Tuesday, November 26th, 2013. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I hope you're enjoying your holiday season, whether that's Thanksgiving or Hanukkah or Christmas or all of those things combined together, because it's an interesting few weeks right at this particular point. My guest today is Scott Lowe, who's been in the information technology field for 20 years, starting out with desktop support. Along the way, he's been an instructor, a technical trainer, and a Microsoft certified trainer, systems admin, IT manager, systems engineer, consultant, a CTO for a small startup, and the practice lead for a national VAR VMware practice. And lately, he's been a forward-looking technologist for large enterprise storage vendors based in the northeastern U.S. and working as an engineering architect for VMware, focused on network virtualization and software-defined networking. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity to be on the show.
My pleasure. You know, we talk about VMware constantly in the context of Hyper-V, and I'm sort of sick of it, to be honest. You know, there's more to VMware and more to Hyper-V than just comparing the two all the time. And I think part of it's got to do with how we're doing networking going forward as well.
Well, I would certainly agree with you there. VMware obviously has had phenomenal success as a compute virtualization vendor, but a lot of times people overlook the fact that VMware actually has a fairly broad portfolio of products, including, you know, its recent foray into the area of software-defined networking with the Nicira acquisition last year, and then this year with the introduction at VMworld US of VMware NSX, which went GA at VMworld EMEA in Barcelona.
So those who haven't heard of NSX, can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, sure, of course. So the NSX comes out of, as I mentioned, the acquisition of a company called Nicira, which occurred last summer. Nicira was founded by a couple of folks who came out of Stanford, and they were involved in the work that came out of Stanford that eventually led to the creation of the OpenFlow protocol, which was a way of allowing people to programmatically install rules, if you will, into a switch to control how it forwarded traffic across the network. And you know, OpenFlow, you probably heard of it, Richard. You know, it's gotten the networking world, you know, kind of by the horns these days, and everybody's talking about software-defined networking. Nicira was acquired by VMware last summer, and since that time, they've been working on integrating the product that they had created, which was a product called NVP, the Network Virtualization Platform, into some of VMware's own offerings. And then that was what we announced at VMworld US, which was VMware NSX, which is a multi-hypervisor, multi-cloud management platform, network virtualization solution to bring, virtual networking to any kind of environment, whether it be vSphere, you know, KVM, Xen, and eventually Hyper-V even.
Yeah, you know, I just love this idea. Like, on the surface, it just seems so self-evident that we should have maintainable, manageable configuration systems for networking the same way we do with our manifests for our virtual machines.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, part of what NSX is trying to achieve is this idea of being able to bring some level of automation and coordination to the world of networking, much like we've been able to do when we introduced the hypervisor in the compute world, right? And so you've seen hypervisors take off with Windows and Hyper-V. You've seen them take off in the open source space with Xen and KVM and obviously with VMware's own hypervisor. But now we've got these APIs where we can go in and we can say, hey, I want to create X number of virtual machines and I want them to have these attributes and these properties and be stored here. And you know, then we add on some configuration management tools like a Puppet or a Chef or a Salt or an Ansible or something like that. And we haven't really been able to do that on the networking side. And so it's really fascinating and very interesting to be involved in the space where now we introduce these ideas of network virtualization and then bring a layer that has, you know, REST APIs, for example, that now we can manipulate these APIs to automatically create, you know, layer two adjacent networks or groups of layer three subnets and routers in between them, and access control lists and NAT rules and all the kind of cool stuff that you can do in networking now being able to be done programmatically through a set of APIs. It's very, very exciting.
Yeah. And, you know, a port's just a port, just like a CPU is just a CPU. We got server virtualization. Although I don't want to skip past the hard part, you know, and it took Intel and AMD creating new microcode inside of the hardware to really make virtualization work well. I wonder how much play we're going to get from the hardware vendors on the networking side to get those same kinds of results.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that because, you know, there's a company that's been getting some attention recently. It's a company called Revelo Systems, and I don't know if you've heard of them or not. But they recently were talking about how they're doing there's a particular technology called binary translation, which is the idea of trapping certain CPU instructions when they're executed by an unmodified guest operating system instance, trapping them and translating them into something that the underlying CPU can understand. Mm-hmm. And binary translation was a technology that VMware ESX and ESXi used for many years with outstanding performance before Intel and AMD introduced their VTX and AMDV extensions respectively.
Right.
And actually in the first release of those extensions, the binary translation performance was still better than the actual hardware extensions. It wasn't until the second generation of the hardware extensions that we were able to kind of offload all of that and not worry about it.
Right.
But to your point, you know, certainly we're looking forward to seeing hardware vendors jump along. One of the really exciting things that came out of the VMworld announcement was that we have a whole raft of vendors who have jumped on to integrate their hardware switches into NSX. So, you know, Arista, Brocade, Dell, Juniper, HP, Cumulus Networks. There's probably some others. I can't remember, but they all announced that they would be providing support for their switches to integrate into NSX so that we could actually basically layer that same level of control that we're doing on the virtual side over on the ports on these physical switches as well to integrate them into this broader piece. So that's very cool. And, you know, it's going to take time. You know, networking relies so heavily on silicon that, you know, exists inside the NICs and all this kind of jazz that we can't do hardware offloads and NICs today, for example, without doing some funny little tricks. But we're already working really closely with the hardware vendors, to help develop the next generation of silicon as well as the next generation of protocols that we use, stuff like NVGRE and VXLAN. So that those two will come together in a way that we can actually enable hardware offloads, hopefully in the very near future through, you know, the NICs that you stick in your servers and the chipsets that are found in the switches and that sort of thing.
Right. I mean, we're now getting into a situation where, you know, we keep wanting virtualization to be completely transparent and where the VM lives should be irrelevant. But the bottom line is I have 6 VMs living in a given piece of hardware. Their networking capabilities are going to be dramatically better than 3 VMs in one machine, 3 VMs in another machine, no matter how good the network connection is.
Depending on the workloads, you'll typically see better performance within a host system just because you're running at, you know, bus speed,
right?
Rather than having to go across a transport. You know, we could speculate about, you know, developments like, you know, a rack scale architecture that Intel's working on with Silicon Photonics and 100G low latency 100 gig interconnects. But for now, you're absolutely spot on. The interesting trick though is, you know, if you think about it, and you may have already put the two and two together, but a lot of people just it becomes obvious once you explain it, but sometimes they miss it. If you think about this now, let's say that, okay, we've got two workloads that want to communicate with one another.
Right.
We know that those workloads will perform better if they are co-resident on the same machine.
Yep.
Right. If we can build connections between the intelligence in the compute virtualization layers, as well as the controllers in the network virtualization layers, we can actually recognize when large bandwidth flows, we call these elephant flows, right?
Right.
Because they're very large and take up a lot of bandwidth. When elephant flows are occurring between these two VMs, we could actually initiate a live migration to put those two VMs co-resident on the same compute system and offload all that traffic off the network, optimizing both performance of the workloads and optimizing utilization of the network, which is very cool in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I think that you headed down exactly the right path. I would also imagine that, you know, I'm I'm a hardware geek at heart. You know, I was never shy about doing stuff like chaining a set of servers together with InfiniBand just to make the communication with them smoke and fast. But it used to be all low-level stuff I had to do to make that work. I got to think, if I can stick a virtualization layer over top of an InfiniBand bus between a dozen big servers, you know, in the 100 gigabit range, nobody's going to care that I'm not using Ethernet.
Yeah, yeah. The only common thing that we require from an NSX perspective is just IP connectivity.
Right.
But heck, if you wanted to run IP over InfiniBand, you know, go for it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, Ethernet, if history repeats itself with Ethernet, Ethernet will eventually become the ubiquitous interconnect methodology, even though it will be Ethernet in name only and not any resemblance to what Bob Metcalfe invented in 1973. But, you know, the ever-increasing performance increases, 40 gig becoming much more common now, and 100 gig, you know, it won't be too long before, just because of the sheer volume of Ethernet, that the cost and performance, you know, ratio for using Ethernet for 100 gig versus something like InfiniBand will be far in Ethernet's favor. At least that's what I think.
I think the other side of network topology here is that so many of the average skill-setted ops folks don't think about their networking at all. They buy a 48-port switch, and they plug cables into it and expect it to figure it out, which, for better or worse, it's done for the past 20-something years.
Right, right. You know, but the thing is, what's happened over these, you know, these past, especially, like, let's say the last 10 years, right, as compute virtualization has really taken off, is that compute virtualization makes certain assumptions about how hypervisors and VMs are gonna communicate or move or migrate. You know, for example, if I want to do a live migration of a VM from one host to another host, we make these assumptions about, oh, well, the subnet where it's gonna land is gonna be the same, and it's gonna be on the same broadcast domain and this kind of stuff. And it's forced the physical network topology to evolve in certain ways that weren't really kind of ideal for networks, right? Moving, kind of forcing people to build larger layer two broadcast domains, which typically don't scale as well, versus this sort of repeatable building block layer three routed solution that runs the very largest network, you know, in the world, which is, of course, the internet.
Right.
The beautiful thing about running something like a network virtualization solution, like NSX, is that we encapsulate the traffic so that these layer two topologies become essentially invisible to their link topology.
Yes.
And I can create logical layer two adjacencies and say, hey, I want this VM to be logically adjacent to that VM, even though physically they might be across two different subnets on different hypervisors. That allows the network engineers who have to design the networks to then build them using these really, really scalable building block architectures like leaf spine with layer three above the top of rack, that sort of thing, and not be forced into these weird large layer two broadcast domains without also having to sacrifice the flexibility that you get of being able to say, I want to take two workloads and make sure that they essentially treat each other as if they're on the same network. I think it's really going to change how data centers are architected moving forward. We're seeing this trend already in kind of the web scale data centers, but I think it's going to really impact the enterprise very soon.
Well, this sort of speaks to, you know, this is the ultimate manifestation of virtualization in my mind. Once everything is virtualized, now I create an individual set of VMs for a specific set of tasks, a given application. And part of that configuration includes how they need to be connected together and what connections go outside of that little pool of resources.
Oh, you're absolutely right, Richard. I mean, there's no question about it. Programmatically, we can now go in, whether this be through some sort of, you know, self-service user portal or through a set of APIs or a configuration management tool, whatever the, you know, mechanism driving the provisioning that you want to use. But we could now go in and say, I want four VMs, two of them on this subnet, two of them on that subnet. Maybe it's a multi-tier architecture, whatever.
Right.
You know, these guys need to talk to the outside world and talk to the back-end guys. The back-end guys only need to talk to the front-end guys over these specific ports using these specific protocols. And then they could talk to the outside world using these specific ports and protocols. And I want to instantiate, you know, some load balancing as part of this process. So I want these two front end guys to be, you know, running their traffic through a load balancer. And here's the external VIP you're going to provide to the outside world. And boom, done. All of that handled programmatically.
Right.
And have these services instantiated in many cases, instantiated, you know, in the hypervisor, actually in kernel, so that it's running at very high performance and almost, you know, essentially line rate, even on 10 gig.
Yeah. I used to do this with Ethernet jacks. right? I used to have these servers with three Ethernet jacks, one for the outward facing, one for the backend facing, one for the administration interface, and separate switches across them. So we just ran in isolation for all those things. We're just making this a configuration file instead of a bunch of cables and hardware.
Yep. Yep. And providing context, you know, in the actual protocol traveling across the network so that we can multiplex these types of traffic together.
Mm-hmm.
But keep them isolated, right? You know, we used to do that sort of isolation physically.
Right.
Actually, physically separate switches like you described.
Yep.
Then we moved to VLANs, which were a way to logically divide a switch.
Yeah. Not that you could see it. You had to hold it in your head, yep, or in a spreadsheet. But,
exactly,
you know.
Exactly. Now we're just taking that to the next level and actually giving you a way to multiplex traffic on a single wire and have that traffic really be isolated. I mean, even to the point where we could run overlapping IP addresses.
Right.
In two different logical networks. Like I could say, you know, hey, here's a logical network for you, Richard, and you want to run a 10 whatever, and here's a logical network for me, and I want to run the exact same address space. They can coexist on the same physical wire.
And it doesn't matter. Yeah. So it's completely irrelevant. But and you need to get there when you're, you know, why do I want to try and isolate by IP in the cloud? I mean, you'll make yourself insane trying to do that. It's unnecessary.
That's right. It doesn't scale.
Yeah. Ultimately, this is not a scalable solution. So keeping these things packaged this way just speaks to it. Plus, that is now a configuration file. That is yet another resource that I can package and manage and put in source control and know where it lives. And it's part of the app.
Yep. You're spot on. Absolutely.
For me now, the issue here is I think I need to automate this workload balancing and subsequently its network balancing as well. Like we were talking about taking advantage of network hardware, of doing, TCP/IP offload on good NICs. But I only really need that on the outward facing NIC. So the question, you know, how much of this do I need to find and how far away from a tool like NSX looking and going, well, if that's the outward facing NIC and I'm looking at the kind of traffic it's got, I need it to own a special piece of hardware here. I'm going to give it this NIC rather than just the regular virtual ports.
I don't think it's that far off, to be honest with you. I mean, it's certainly not outside the realm of possibility. You know, already the software can recognize, for example, if we wanted, there are certain topologies where we may want to extend a logical network over an untrusted physical network, right?
Right.
And so in those cases, we can actually apply IPsec encryption to the network traffic. And it's already capable of recognizing, hey, this CPU has the AES NI instruction set, so I'm going to offload all of that encryption traffic onto the CPU rather mm-hmm. than trying to do it in software.
Right. Yeah, that is the dance, isn't it? Who's going to handle what kind of workload?
Yeah, absolutely. And so it's certainly not unreasonable to say that once the silicon vendors like Intel and Broadcom and others have these NICs that provide hardware offload functionality that we'll be able to, you know, to basically present that functionality up to the software and the software say, okay, hey, this NIC has hardware offload. This one doesn't. Therefore, we're going to leverage this one or throw a flag if the user tries to configure it incorrectly or whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and play the same game with just regular virtual machines. It's like, okay, I'm trying to optimize my utilization. So I've got these steady workloads that I'm moving on to same machines so that I'm getting 80, 90% utilization on the hardware. Right up until a failure comes and we all have to panic. But this idea that here's a group of VMs with a lot of network traffic or maybe temporarily a lot of network traffic. And so let's move them closer together to save the traffic till they finish their synchronization and move them apart again.
Yeah. And there's other things you could do too from a purpose of optimizing. Now, I want to be clear that, you know, some of the stuff that I'll talk about is it's not in the product today.
We're speculating, just, I'm enjoying the hell out of it, to be honest.
That's fine. I just want to be clear, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, if you had the ability, one of the things that's really, really difficult is to do this sort of detection of these flows of traffic in the network. My boss, Martin Casado, who is one of the guys who came out of Stanford, helped develop OpenFlow and was one of the co-founders of Nicira. He and a few others recently have been talking a lot about this idea of these elephant flows, which are these large bandwidth, long-lived traffic flows that exist in the network, right? And one of the things that's really difficult is actually detecting those and doing something about them if you're not really close to the application.
Sure.
So one of the cool things that is made possible by what VMware is doing with NSX is this idea of saying, hey, NSX works by leveraging a virtual switch that sits in the hypervisor, mm-hmm. right? And so this virtual switch can actually detect one of these elephant flows very early on and then potentially, and this is where, you know, we're working with other, you know, other companies and trying to define standards around this, but potentially we could actually signal that that this flow is an elephant flow, mm-hmm. Either through a bit in a protocol header or something of that nature, maybe a control plane, protocol signal, whatever, you know, that we want to use there, but you could actually signal to the physical underlying fabric that this is an elephant flow. This is a long lived high bandwidth flow. And I want you to handle it differently than you would other flows.
Right.
Whether that be routing it onto its own interconnect, whether that be prioritizing it differently, using a different hashing method for how you're going to place it on a link, whatever the case may be. So it's not just about being able to put workloads close to each other, which is one way, right? But it's also about being able to potentially signal to the underlying physical network fabric that certain traffic flows are happening in a certain way and being able to have the physical fabric respond appropriately to optimize that traffic.
Do we need to define an elephant flow better? I mean, when you say it, I immediately think a migration.
So, an elephant flow that's the term we use just to describe any sort of long-lived, high bandwidth flow.
Right. How long is long-lived in that case?
Yeah, long-lived could be, just minutes, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, we're not talking hours or days, of course, typically. No.
But if you're hauling a 250 gig VM, that to me is an elephant flow.
Yes, absolutely. So in an elephant flow could be a VM migration. So that's mm-hmm. a great example. It could be any sort, if you're doing some, maybe if you're going to do some IP storage type stuff and you're, you know, pushing a bunch of data to an IP storage array or pulling it from an IP storage array via iSCSI NFS, something like that, those could potentially represent as elephant flows. So those are all examples. The counterpart to an elephant flow naturally is called a mice or a mouse flow, right? Which are very small, very short-lived, very transient. And existing sort of technologies and techniques for handling that sort of traffic in the network is already pretty well optimized. So the trick is we just have to tell the network how to manage these elephant flows that tend to step on right. the smaller flows that coexist with them.
Well, and just being able to, I guess the question is, how do you detect that this is happening? Is this something that should be part of open flow that you're basically sending a signal? Here comes a big one.
Well, that's why I was saying that the mechanism could be any number of things, right? The challenge with doing it in hardware is that the hardware often lacks the context around right. what's going on. It sees a packet coming in and it forwards it and goes on. Right. So you would generally need the hardware to maintain a bunch of state about who's it communicating with and what are they communicating over, that kind of stuff. This is state that is naturally maintained by the virtual switch in the hypervisor. So it makes a lot of sense to do it there rather than trying to recreate the state maintenance in the physical layer.
Well, and it speaks to me, what am I thinking of in networking? Automatically, was it pipelining or chimney piping that where you automatically change the MTU size once, two peers recognize they had a bunch of data to move between them, they stopped using a 1.5K packet, they bumped up to an 8K packet or bigger?
Yeah, I think it may be some window size scaling or something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And that's just, you know, to me, that seems like the same sort of problem. It's like, hey, we're going to be talking for a while. And we're going to move a lot of data. Why don't we tweak our communication protocol to optimize that?
Right. Like, and there's a number of different ways you can handle that. You generally wouldn't use something like OpenFlow because OpenFlow is really kind of very specific in what it's capable of doing. I mean, you could potentially, if you had an OpenFlow physical switch, you could install a flow rule that says traffic from this source to this destination, which we've identified as one of these high bandwidth flows, should be routed in a very particular way, right? Or we could allow the physical transport network to just continue to use, you know, normal IP forwarding mechanisms and things like equal class multipathing and that sort of thing. And then just signal that through a flag in the traffic that this is an elephant flow and that it should be routed differently or something of that nature. So there's a couple different ways you can handle it. And this is part of just like the kind of the cutting edge, you know, what we're looking at and how we're trying to identify, how we can help optimize that stuff.
For sure. Yeah. The more that we can communicate effectively about what the behavior is going to be all the way down through the stack, the better the system is going to be to optimize itself for it.
In most cases, yes. Now there is some value in ensuring that you maintain a certain level of hardware independence.
Mm-hmm.
For example, we collectively as a society don't really do any sort of end-to-end signaling across the internet.
Right.
Right. And so this conversation that we're having right now is occurring across the internet via Skype, and there's no end-to-end QoS, there's no end-to-end telemetry, anything of that nature that is being provided, yet it works fine. And so there's some value in when you start building these scalable networks and saying, I'm not going to start pushing all this detail down into the hardware. I'm going to let the hardware remain very, very simple and just capable of doing this robust IP forwarding and put the intelligence at the edge. And in this case, the edge would be represented by the virtual switch that sits in the hypervisor, where it's very, very close to the application and the workload, can maintain state about the application and the workload, what it's doing, how it's communicating, the flows that it's using, its peers that it's communicating with, so on and so forth, can even communicate, or the potential exists to communicate with, you know, the underlying hypervisor to say, you know, what are the, you know, key processes that are using traffic? You know, how are they communicating? What users are logged in? What process does this, you know, or what user does this process belong to? That kind of stuff, all for the purposes of ensuring, you know, security, performance, et cetera, but doing that at what we refer to as the overlay. So signaling at the edge and allowing the physical network just to forward the traffic.
Right. And you know, I'm almost starting to feel like you got privacy issues once you press against that too. It's like, yeah, I want my network to understand enough about what I'm trying to do here to leave it open. But as soon as I'm identifying specific kinds of traffic, it also opens itself up to filtration and firewalling and so forth.
Right. I mean, so there's certain value in maintaining that abstraction away from the physical network, because at that point you can say we're just forwarding traffic and there's no way for the physical systems to necessarily, you know, be able to do something that you wouldn't want them to do.
Data,
you
know, is data, right?
Yep. Yeah.
I also wonder how much the, and I don't mean to go too far off the path here, how much the Open Compute Project and its move towards networking is going to affect all of this.
Well, you know, I think these are actually kind of, and this is just kind of my personal opinion. Mm-hmm. I think they're actually kind of like parallel initiatives, right?
Right.
We talked early on about how for years and years and years, networking has kind of been stuck in this. I couldn't go and define programmatically, you know, how I wanted the network to behave.
Right.
I mean, yes, you know, I could log in via SSH to, you know, half a dozen switches or whatever the case may be, and I could run these commands and yeah, but that doesn't really count as having a programmatic interface to be able to make these changes. So I see what's happening. Really, like two things are very, very interesting to me. One is the Open Compute Project and their, you know, this work they've done with this open source hardware implementation and all that kind of stuff going on. It's very, very interesting. You know, I don't know what's going to happen there, but it certainly is going to put some pressure on the hardware side, mm-hmm. For some of the bigger vendors. The other very interesting thing is this move towards kind of more open network software. So I don't know if you've heard of this company called Cumulus Linux, which takes basically a Linux distribution, optimizes it to run on a network switch, and gives it, you know, and they've got a fairly small hardware compatibility list today, but I expect that will increase. And so the idea now is that you've got a bunch of switches in your network and you can essentially treat them just like they were a Linux server.
Right.
So you could run, you know, Puppet manifests or Chef cookbooks or, you know, anything against it to maintain the configuration of those systems for the purposes of, you know, automatically configuring themselves or you know, ensuring that their configuration is the right one for a leaf spine fabric that then you're going to run an overlay on with something like NSX. And then the hardware that you could to potentially run that open source, you know, network software on is itself being developed in an open source fashion. So yeah, I think those are very fascinating and in many ways parallel to what we're trying to do with the overlay stuff in NSX. Basically saying to customers, hey, you know, look, you know, we want to give you some freedom of choice in what kind of network equipment you can buy. Not saying that the network equipment isn't important, but saying that, you know, we're going to give you that functionality and have it decoupled from the hardware, rather have it running at the edge, closer to the workloads on your hypervisor.
Well, the reality is that the network hardware vendors have played this game for a long time of creating custom firmware for their devices that made it very easy for you to play with their devices amongst each other, but hard with everybody else. You know, it reminds me, you know, going down to the home level stuff of DDWRT and Tomato on your little NAT router at home. That the firmware that Linksys and their like made was lousy, and an open source set of firmware made the product dramatically better and more capable. And now this seems to be applied across a very broad reach of hardware.
Yeah. I think that's a very reasonable comparison to make.
And they have not been incented to create this openness on it on their own. And so now it's happening out in the wild, and it's kind of disruptive.
Yes. It'll be very interesting to see how things play out. I'm kind of a fan of what Cumulus is doing. I have no financial vested interest in anything on Nature, just an interested third party. And so it'll be fascinating to see how well that takes off.
Yeah, for sure. And in my mind, nothing but good stuff too. It's just it's this, once again, this combination of hardware and good low level software so that we can build this higher level set of thinking around what it really should look like to run an application efficiently.
Yep.
Scott, lots of fun to talk to you. I really appreciate your insights on VMware NSX and looking beyond just the hypervisor.
Absolutely. It was a fascinating discussion. I appreciate the time, Richard.
You bet. And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.